Hello, it's Yvonne Halling here from bedandbreakfastcoach.com, and today I'm in conversation with Marie Davies, who has been running a bed and breakfast business for almost 34 years now. So I hope you'll be interested in what she has to say. So let's dive in. Marie, welcome to the call.
Hi, good to be here. Thank you.
You're great, great. So 34 years is a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. So can you take us, can you give us an introduction as to, you know, your story as to how that has transpired?
So when I started in August of 1989, there was no internet, so no websites. There were a handful of guidebooks out there, but the bulk of my business came from overflow from another woman who had been running her B&B for several years at that point, and she just lived down the street from me.
What prompted you to open a B&B in the first place? Because it wasn't that well known at the time, was it, or was it?
It was not here. Mm-hmm. What prompted me was a series of events, and the first knowledge of B&Bs came from reading a magazine article in 1982 in Victorian Homes magazine. And I thought, what the perfect combination of living in a Victorian mansion, entertaining's in my blood, entertaining perpetual, getting paid to entertain, keep my house clean, and cook, you know, and I love to cook. So anyway, but file that away. I'd just gotten a very difficult degree in chemistry and wasn't willing to scrap that for the unknown. So fast forward, I get married and we go on a honeymoon to New Orleans, and I signed us up for a B&B that was so bad. And so bad that every morning I thought, I could do this so much better.
Yeah. How hard can it be, right?
It's hard to fall off the floor. Okay. And that's where this place was. But it was cheap. You know, it had that going for it. So that was 87. In 88, I had my first baby, tried, you know, women can have it all. That was that era. And not for me. Wasn't a fit. I quit. And my husband's, and then we had tenants at the time, and they abruptly moved out a month after I quit my very well-paying career job as a chemist. And he said, well, you always wanted to do B&B. We could modify the house and make it happen. And that's what we did. And so I was able to work, but be home with my then first baby. And I think by then pregnant with kid number two. When I opened, I was definitely pregnant with the second one. And it allowed me to be an at-home mom and an in-home, you know, career person. So, but we very quickly outgrew that small 2000 square foot house with two rooms sharing one bathroom. And back then shared bath was okay. Mm. It was either quit or get a bigger house. And we got the biggest house in the same neighborhood that we could get. So I went from a 2000 square foot house to a 10,000 square foot house with the room to expand. If I completely get this finished, I would have 9 rooms. But anyway, so we moved over here, and then I had to hustle more. And back then, networking was the other way to get guests, because
local networking
was a great way to get guests. And by then there were 5 or 6 of us up and running, and we knew each other, so we were confident referring each other. And if somebody didn't want to be in a kid environment, I would send them to one of the places. I remember a guy calling saying, you know, what do you do for honeymooners? I said, I send them to other B&Bs. I have small children. So
I love that. Yeah. So honest, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, not the expectation. There's nothing right in the bait and switch. Right. And
right.
And some people appreciated that honesty and booked anyway, because they love kids, and other people said, thank you. And off they went. requests for hot tubs. I did not do that. We'll never do that, but I would send them to the place. If that was important, I'd send them to the place that had the hot tub. So we did that for each other.
Well, together.
We would meet with regularity, and we'd do our war stories, but we would collaborate on other things. Like one of the issues was our taxi service was really awful back then. We each took 5 companies, called to see who would work with us. We found one and we just relied on them. So we did stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then the internet comes in, and it actually came in, I think, in the late 80s, but by the mid early 90s, it was established. And I signed, and I was computer savvy, my, you know, degree mm-hmm. in chemistry, minor in math. I'm a computer geek at heart, which is why I do websites now. So I signed up for every directory that was cheap or free. And within literally 2 weeks, I was getting so many international reservations. It was like Easter egg hunting, where, you know, somebody had just dumped 500 of them in my living room. And it's like, how can you not succeed here? Right. And that was a really, really a game changer. But I did not get a website till the early 2000s. A friend set it up for me. It was Microsoft had a website program, and it was really crude, and I didn't like working on it. And so I didn't, and I paid that price dearly. But fast forward, and by 2000, and I think 10 or 12, somewhere in there, I went with a professional hospitality website, and that leapfrogged me exponentially again. So that was something I learned when I would upgrade my website stuff. It's like Google sees a new thing and like, let's send everybody their way, you know, kind of thing. So the internet opened up the international guests. And guests were demanding by then to be able to use credit card. In the old days, it was check and cash, mostly cash. And they were demanding more luxury things. They wanted more of the hotel amenities, but like the intimacy and the relationship of a traditional B&B. And the other thing I saw was traditionally women travelers would seek us out because they felt safer with us. Mm-hmm. So they were, and so that meant they demanded, you know, set up a computer in the library with a printer, and we catered to the business people. So that was a shift when the internet came in. It opened us up to everybody and everything. And I was dumbfounded that my circle of competitors just shook their head no, not doing it. I was
really?
Like, oh, yeah, it was really
interesting. we're up to about 2012 now, right? When you went with a professional hospitality website company, which shot you onto the world stage, more or less. And
in a professional, sleek way. I resisted for a long time, but then it also adopted online booking. I liked getting the calls because I had a feel for who was coming and whether I wanted them or not. And I didn't want to lose that. So I did resist the online booking, which had been around for a while at that point. But I finally, around 2012 or so, did adopt that because people wanted the ease of booking when it was. And if they were anything like me, it's like last night, I was Christmas shopping at 10:30 last night. They want to be able to do it when it's quiet for them, not when it's convenient to me. So that lesson, and that was a light bulb moment. I need to make my website easy for them to use. I need it to make it easy for them to book and to make it easy for me to be accessible should they want that phone call. And I still get a lot of people who do want the call and have the question kind of thing. So I'm open to both, but that online booking, again, was a game changer. And if you do not have that, I think you're doomed, basically. Then the OTAs. Okay, so I was floating along and I was keeping up with the rate of inflation. You know, I was maybe a little bit more growing 3-5%. And I was just trying all these different things. I tried a newsletter. I did sign up with booking.com. And that did get me a rush of reservations that I wouldn't have had. But I cringed at the commission that I was paying. And I tried all these different things. Then I took your course and learned the proper way, the best way to do this business and to make it profitable and to make me a happier host.
Yes.
I wasn't, as I joke, the scullery maid. And I used to watch Fawlty Towers. I wasn't the scullery maid anymore. I did the things I love to do, which is greet my guests, cook their breakfast, because I love the whole art of presenting a beautiful meal on the table. And I liked working. By then I had a really good, through you, I got an even better professional website, through Rosenthal, and got really good at that software. And, I just kept adding things and offering more to my guests. Now they're looking for the experience now. They're not looking just for a head in a bed. And that used to be the old joke. The woman that taught me the business, I loved her dearly. She was so good to me and got me launched. But she ran what I called meat market bed and breakfast. She would have deals. She would cut prices. She just needed a head in every bed of her B&B. And that was her focus. And not
The woman who taught you, set you up in the beginning, was like in a kind of what we call the meat market.
The meat market, discounting,
and deals, and any room at any price.
And that left me feeling smarmy. And I did not like it when people asked for a discount unless it suited me to do so. But mostly it put me off. And so I found you and I learned all the ways to, I don't need to do that. It diminished me to do that. All the stuff I gave away for free diminished me to do that. And it just left me resenting my guests after a while. And I'm in this for the long haul and I still love doing it. I still plan to do it. But in that era, I needed to do it. It was how I supported my family, that was my career. And I needed to pivot. And that's the key thing, is I've been able to pivot no matter what I've been hit with. And there was there have been other recessions. There was one in the late, when I first started, we were kind of still in one. And then 2010, we were in another one. Now we're in another one, the pandemic. I was able to pivot. And that's one of the key takeaways from your coaching course, is we need to be able to pivot. And we're small enough to be able to do that. The OTAs, I believe, are just too big, too bogged down with too many cooks in the kitchen, because when you have a board of directors who may or may not agree on the right thing to do, they just do the thing that the majority says they can do. It's a boat that's just sort of wobbling in the water.
Right.
And I liken it to my granddaughter has a swing in the backyard that's a flat thing and it's on four ropes hanging from a tree, and I would push her. And sometimes it would go this way and sometimes it would hit the tree and then it would bounce off. And that's how I see the OTAs. They have no direction. They're just too big to be able to correct themselves and do a straight course where we can pivot.
I think that's a really good point. I just wanted to interject there, because I think also that I think the concept of the OTAs was a great idea in the beginning, but like all good ideas, they have their time and then they disappear.
Yeah. And I thought I needed them too, because again, that was in my era of trying, what can I do? I've got to get better than 3-5%. And I signed on to them about 6 months before I signed on to you. Mm-hmm. And I never lost sight of the fact that I hired them to market for me. They do not own me. They do not tell me what to do. I tell them how I'm going to do it. And I've never wavered from that. And too many posts on Facebook I see by other owners feel they're held hostage and they are victims of the OTAs. And it's like, if you let them, sure. You know, and that's certainly the easiest path. But I've never been in that position. I hired them and I can fire them.
Right.
And so I use them to my advantage. I give them inventory when it's suits me. I give them specific inventory. My hardest two rooms to sell. I manage them. They don't control me by any stretch. And so they can be useful, and especially if you're just starting out, but you cannot, too many B&Bs are using them as their channel manager, as the way the channels that you get guests, and as their website. And so case in point, this morning I saw in a Facebook group somebody saying they were cleaners for short-term rentals, and all they had was a Facebook page that took me many tries to find, because it was it was not well done. And when I finally found the page, all it was before and after pictures of what this person does. There's no picture of them. There's no picture. It was just a mess, and it was all the wrong things you should do with your Facebook business page. And I don't trust them, not using them. If I have to work that hard just to find the page, I'm going to probably have to work hard to get them in the door to get a bid, and I'm done. Don't have time, don't have an interest anymore. And that's what you become when you sign on to the OTAs. You're faceless and you're nameless. Your rooms don't even have the beautiful names that you've named your rooms, because you're a specialty B&B and there's some sort of theme that you're following. And nope, all gone. Deluxe, queen, basic, twin, or, you know, just really generic things like a hotel would have. You're faceless, you're nameless. And where is the trust? And that's what so many hosts lose when they go onto the OTAs. And if I can't, I may use them for research if I'm staying somewhere, But if a place I'm interested in does not have a website, I'm on to the next thing.
Right.
And if that website doesn't have online booking, I'm on to the next thing, because these are the points of trust at how professional is this person really. And the least amount of trust means the higher amount of risk.
Right.
So I see those hosts who rely completely on the OTAs for exposure as a website, as a channel manager, are going to, there was a post this morning where the woman's burning out, or she did burn out and they shut their B&B down. Now she wants to start up again, but she has realized the real key points and what they did wrong the first time. So I'll watch on her.
Tell me what happened when Airbnb came along then, because I think there were several thousand of them opened up in your area.
There are now 11,500.
Because a lot of hosts think that they're in competition with Airbnb. So talk about that, your experience of that.
I only signed up with them to fight the city. I won the fight. I left a couple of rooms on there. I seriously overpriced the rooms because I don't want that market. They are not my ideal guest. You taught us to hone in, and I had to go at it backwards. Well, I don't want weddings. I don't want children anymore. I don't want this. I don't want that. And I got to who my ideal guest was. And in Airbnb, I had one this year that was, and they've been back directly. But they were in a hurry, and that's how they booked. But all the other people I've had, and it's a handful a year, I do not see them as competition. Those are people who want a very cheap place to stay. They want the whole place to themselves. And that usually is code for they want to entertain in some form or another. I've read posts where everything from meth parties to porn shoots to just rowdy parties. That's not my market. I can honestly say the worst I've ever happened here is I had to knock on a door to tell somebody not to smoke a cigarette just as a smoke alarm was going off. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never had an issue with disrespectful guests, guests who violated my rule. My only house rule is no smoking. I've never had the problems so they're not my market, and I don't see them as, I don't even see the B&B that's 2 miles from here, who I started with her mom back in 1989, and I've known her forever, good friend, blah, blah, blah. I don't even see her as a competition because her property is different than mine. Her style is different than mine, and she is different than me. And it's apples and oranges. And I'm sure people have stayed here but gone to her. And I know I've had people that stayed there and come to me. So let the guests decide, but we're not competition because we're so different and unique. And that's, mm-hmm. again, a thing you lose when you're on the OTAs, especially Airbnb, because again, they just list rooms by types and things like that. I don't see them as a competition, but they are decimating our housing stock here. And it's projected that 80% of what's owned here, because we have such lax, they might as well be non-existent rules for the Airbnb short-term rental industry, that investors from all over the world are buying up our property to do Airbnb. But what I'm also seeing is it's such a saturated market. Somebody said they had nothing in November, and I laughed. It was my third best November in 34 years. I picked up some more. So that thing I sent you, you know, 4 went to 3.
Right.
I just laughed like we were laughing now. It's a different market. It's a different goal. Theirs is money driven. It's they don't want the interaction with guests. So it's a transaction, not a relationship. And my guests that I've had that have tried Airbnb do not trust Airbnb and will not go back to Airbnb because of that reason. They've had bad experiences. It's a crapshoot. You can put any picture on a website. But when you get my daughter who just got married a couple of weekends ago and her fiance booked one in the neighborhood. And it was, I know the building, it would have been a nice one. They couldn't find, they were given a key code to a lockbox that they could not find. Hmm. They ended up on my doorstep at 1 a.m. They went back the next day in the day because it was late at night. They went back the next day in the daylight. They still couldn't find it, or it didn't work. I forget, but they still couldn't get in, and they spent 4 days here instead of 4 days. And I don't know how they resolved it or if they bothered, but that kind of, it's just when you don't have a person on site and you know, a way to get a hold of somebody, that just, it's scary and risky. And so
yeah, there's a lack of hospitality involved there. They call it,
there's zero hospitality
yeah. involved. It's, as you say, it's transactional.
Yeah, they have this app. It's a very popular app that, like, okay, well, here's where your bath, you know, here's the stuff in your bathroom, and here's where the blanket, blah, blah, blah. It's all on this app. And here's where you can go to eat, and here's where you can go to shop. And it's all on the app instead of me having a conversation with my guests about, well, these are the two restaurants in the neighborhood we love to go to. These are our favorites and why. These places are nice. If you're looking for if it's a special occasion, you might want to try these other two. Steer clear of this one because blah, blah, blah. Mm. And that you don't get that in an app, you don't get the sincerity of the conversation of me saying this to you versus
from
reading
personal experience. Right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And they love the interaction. I make myself available. I don't come out and sit down and have breakfast with guests. I might have a cup of tea standing in the doorway. I read the room to see if anybody has any questions and wants a conversation or want some of these stories and backgrounds and things of my experiences. And some do and some don't. So I step back, but most do. They love my story. They love how I got here. They love what I've done, just the house itself, because it is a unique piece of property. They love what I've done. They love my commitment to both restoring the house and my career and opening my doors to the world. And they love that feel that you'll never get that when you go to an Airbnb, a self-check-in, anything. You just don't get that. You're getting a cheap place to put a bunch of people who don't want any of that. And that's not competition to me. So Airbnb, I was in business 20 years before them, thereabouts, and I'll probably be around 10 or 20 years after them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see them lasting. There's too much dissension amongst the hosts in the group that I'm in here, as well as with the other OTA groups. People are beginning to revolt. And I think it's a matter of a few years before they start to implode from the inside. They send out these surveys, and I answered it yesterday. Well, what can we do to improve? And every time they ask that question, I said, start paying your host, fix your finance department, because I paid my invoices, but you're showing I didn't, and blah, blah, blah. And every time I could get that jab in, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then they send me a message. I haven't read it yet, but I suspect it's because of that. Because I don't care. Because I don't care. It's like, I'll deal with that. Maybe when I'm really bored and, you know, waiting for the timer to go off on the dishwasher, then I'll read it. But so these big companies, I don't see them as a threat, except to the host who feel they have to, that they are a victim of them and have to be part of them in order to succeed. And
I was shocked when I learned quite recently that 80% of listings on booking.com do not have a channel manager, which implies they don't have a website either.
Yeah.
And I was shocked that it was so high. And I think that what's happened over the last few years, that more and more people, like regular people, not people who enjoy doing the things, you know, that you enjoy doing and those things that I enjoyed as well, which is hosting people, entertaining people, cooking for people, making people feel great and making them comfortable, giving them a great experience. It's attracted to that, to this new quick fix, get rich quick scheme.
Yes. Yeah.
Called, you know, whatever you want to call it, short-term rentals or whatever you want to call it, it's attracted a whole new demographic of people who aren't interested in true hospitality. They're interested in making a quick buck.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with making a quick buck, but don't call it hospitality.
They're deluding themselves. And Airbnb, I would say, is probably closer to 95% don't have websites. They're just on that platform. I'd say it's much, much higher. I play around with it sometimes when somebody does a comment, and I'll follow the trend, and there's no, it dead ends almost every single time. So I see them, 'cause they don't, especially the conversations where well, Airbnb isn't behind us anymore. They think that they were part, they were partners and that they would be taken care of. They really believe they drank the Kool-Aid for quite some time. Now they're getting the message. So they're like, oh, well, I've tried Vrbo or I've tried this and I've tried that, which then tells me their whole house rentals. So it's a different industry. They're not my competition by a long shot. But they seem to think that they have to be on a platform. Very few of them have their own website. So Airbnb, I would say, is closer to 95% don't have a website, and rely on Airbnb to get their bookings. And it is a get rich quick thing. The more they're like gathering properties, like you would gather pine cones in the park, without, they're just throwing them in the basket. They really don't care what the properties are like. They just want a lot of them. And I saw COVID just yanked where I was able to pivot and I got through fine. A lot of them crumbled and went to long-term hosting because they couldn't pivot and they didn't know what to do. And they didn't have another source of bookings except Airbnb. And a lot of them sold out and left the business completely. Or became regular apartments and house rentals and things like that. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to pivot no matter what your business is.
And the reason for that, the way that you can pivot is the reason that they couldn't pivot really is because they didn't own anything.
Right.
Some of them in the UK in particular, where I am, you can, you know, rent somebody's apartment and then put it on Airbnb. Somebody actually did this with one of my long-term rentals. I have a few long-term rental properties I've had for about 20 years. And the agent caught somebody out putting one of the rooms in one of my rentals on Airbnb.
Wow.
Yeah. So you can do that here. I mean,
it's done here all the time.
They've tried to crack down on it, you know, with regulation and stuff like that. But I don't know what law this guy was breaking. He was a long-term tenant in my house, right? And then he put one of his rooms on Airbnb.
Yeah, the only, if you have a you can't sublet thing, then that would control that. But short of banning it altogether.
We had that, but he still did it, right? Because unless somebody's policing it, you know, you wouldn't know, would you? We only found out because the agent was smart enough.
Yeah. So
to have a look.
Yeah. And they can get away with a lot. And if I were of that mindset, I could get away with a lot. They've never been in to inspect me since 1994.
Right.
I didn't even get in the door because I just had a baby. I was in the hospital and my husband said, well, come back. She'll be home in 3 days.
And they never did.
They never came back. And that baby is going on 30, you know.
right. Well, maybe they got held up. But getting back to pivoting, though, the reason that they can't pivot is because they don't own anything.
Right.
They're renting everything. They're renting space online. They're renting somebody else's property, or they own the property, but they don't have any knowledge or expertise in actually running a true hospitality business.
Right. And you cannot, I didn't have experience, but I had a passion for it. And I read up about it and I continued to self-educate through, back then you had to use the library.
Yeah.
And I did. I have a good head on my shoulders. And it's not that hard to figure out what you ought to do if you want to do it right. And I do have that passion of, I want to do it right. I don't want to cut corners. I'm not going to do the bare minimum. I'm going to under promise, over deliver is my motto, where too many people over promise and under deliver. And then they are scratching their heads why they don't have a business anymore. I had a passion for it. I had an interest in it. And I had the drive to do it, but no experience. So I made up for that by catching up on the experience part and learning as I went and building as I went. I mean, we took all the best furniture out of our bedroom and put it in the guest rooms. And we had milk crates for like the first 6 months as bedside tables because they were in the guest rooms, you know?
Yeah. I've done that too.
That kind of thing, but we were willing to do that. And as we got more successful, we improved, and I'm still improving. I'm still tweaking. I'm still doing that. But the Airbnbs and a lot of the OTAs where they're just, that's the host's only way to get guests. It's okay, there's a bed, there's one nightstand, there might be a little shelf or a chest of drawers for clothes and maybe a closet and a lamp, and then they're done, you know. And if you're lucky, you've got a waste basket, you know. So I've been in one of those where you didn't even have the nightstands, the stuff sat on the floor next to the bed, you know, eyeglasses, phone, that kind of thing. Those people aren't gonna, because my experience with my guests is they're demanding a whole lot more in the way of luxury stuff, and not they want more amenities. They want to feel pampered, and it doesn't mean, you know, 800 count sheets and down comforters kind of pampered. They want that personal, when they come down and say, can I get this, or can I have that, or blah, blah, blah. I'm here.
Right.
And I was like, oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, well, I didn't mean to buy. Well, you're not, this is what I'm here for, you know, and let me help you. And that what you need is upstairs, and let's go up and get it together. And then, you know, you can be on your way. You don't get that with a transactional, you check into a room and there's, God for even in hotels, sometimes I've had trouble finding somebody to help me get something. Mm-hmm. You don't have that anonymity here. And people need, I think it was you that said that, especially post COVID, people are craving contact with, I can't tell you,
almost connection.
Police here hugging me. And it's like,
right.
They need that. And you don't get that with the Airbnbs, booking.coms, Verbos, those kinds of things. They do serve a purpose. And I remember writing a blog a while back that, you know, Airbnb allows people without money, like college students stuff, to finally travel pretty easily. But that's about it, because they're looking for the cheap place to stay. And the young woman who called, this was last year, she wanted my most expensive room, which at the time was just over 200, like 205 per night, I think it was. And she goes, oh, I wasn't expecting to pay that. And I said, what were you expecting to pay? And she said, $40 a night. And I said, I laughed. I said, oh, well, you should have come in 1992, because that was the price back then. Click. So I didn't care about burning the bridge. I didn't need to be accommodating, because this was not my ideal guest. And so I was happy to, you know, to respond that way.
Is that one of the ways that you feel that you've changed?
Tell me about that. Back then, but it was sort of situational, dependent on the attitude of the person that would get me to do that. And now it's like, no, you know, somebody wanted a discount recently, and they said, well, what kind of discount do you give? And I said, I don't. I said, and this was a friend who wanted to put a friend up here. I said, I can maybe have a bottle of wine in the room for them to enjoy. They were going to be here 3 days. Or I could give them a little cheese and fruit tray, but I don't do discounts. And so this guy was so committed to them not paying the full rate that he paid for them. You know, but I wasn't going to back down, as much as I liked the friend, and as much as, you know, the friendship part of our relationship was really generous. This is my business. And it's like, no, that's I draw the line. I don't do get discounts. It leaves me feeling smarmy. I have 4 emails in my inbox from different B&Bs, because I kind of get ideas about offers sometimes, but every one of them had a discount, and one was like 40% off a 3-night stay or something. It's like,
I've seen those too. I'm on many, 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 many mailing lists for B&Bs. I get emails all the time offering me discounts and deals, and it saddens me because they don't have to do that.
No, and I did it a long time ago to it was a comeback at the rate from 10 years ago when I first opened kind of thing. And we were in this house at that point. And I remember one guy saying, you don't need to discount, I'll come back anyway. Right. And that left a very, you know, that was 24 year ago experience.
That was like a bump on the head, right?
Oh yeah. With the 8x8 beam that holds up my house. Yeah. So we don't need to discount, but too many B&Bs that I follow that I know well, and that's the way they're marketing, they know better, but they're still doing it. And it but we diminish ourselves. We are showing we disrespect ourselves. And then we're going to get guests who disrespect us. And trust me on this, the people, when I did do that here and there in the old days, those were the people that demanded the most and were the most ungrateful while they were demanding the most for the cheapest. And, So that is not a method to grow. That is not a method to get people in the door. Stand in your worth. We had a client that whose rates were so much cheaper than mine, and they were in a paradise part of the world. And I just like, I read him the Riot Act. It's
like, yes.
This is St. Louis and I'm charging more than you are in Hawaii. What are you thinking? And he wanted to discount his rates 20%. And it's like, no.
Tells you to do this, right? You need bookings. Well, drop the price. No, put the price up. I think the kind of takeaway from this is that there are always people with money.
Yeah.
You must never assume that just because you don't have enough money for some reason that other people don't either. Other people always have money, and they're always prepared to spend their money on things they value.
Well, that's just it. Just because I wouldn't pay $700 a night for a room doesn't mean there isn't
somebody else won't. No.
Yeah, it's our perspective. And that is probably one of the hardest things to break people of, is just because they censor based on their own perspective. But you're one person. How many people in the world? 3 billion or something? I don't know. A lot.
8 billion. 8 billion. Okay. 7 billion. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, they do. But, they do. Yeah. Because you know, and just to kind of flesh this point out, is that we all have our own perspective on what's expensive and what's cheap, right? And that is subjective. It's not objective. And so when people say, you know, oh, that's expensive, what they're really telling you is that that's expensive for them.
Yeah.
But that might not be the case for the next guest who books or calls.
And they do.
Somebody, right?
I've stood up for in that case, I've had other people book the room. I don't know that it's really expensive versus cheap, as it just isn't a value. What's a value to me to blow money on is very different than my friend Rudy, who for her, it's this other category of things. And so it's just a perspective of value. But I've learned to let those people go. And if they do say, oh, well, that's too expensive, I said, well, you know, I expect to be here for a long time to come. If your budget allows, just find me when you can. And I let them go. And then it opens, the universe says, oh, wow, okay, well, she's got this open room now. Let's send other people whom that is of value. Mm. And that has happened over and over and over again.
Mm.
So, yeah, just let them go. And but there are people willing to spend money. So the thing to do is raise your rates and feel confident in that raise, and the universe will open up its doors to you, and bookings will come. It's a hard one to teach people.
It is a very hard one to teach people, but it's so important. I think it's really important because we all do this, right? We've all got our idea of the world, you know, our own kind of unique individual perspective of, you know, what's good and what's bad, and you know, based on so many things from our individual pasts. And so when you want to, you know, first of all, when you get into business, let's say you've worked in the public sector or in corporate life, you know, you don't have to like dance for your paycheck, right? You just show up to the office, or you show up to your place of work, and at the end of the month or at the end of the week or whenever you get paid, you get given a paycheck, right? And sometimes you can coast along not doing very much at all and you still get that paycheck. When you work for yourself, where you are the source of the bookings, right, you're the source of the money into your household, it's a very different scenario, and it takes a shift in mindset for that to sink in. And when you say it's hard to teach, I think that's what we're teaching, really.
Yeah.
So what would you say about that kind of process, going from being paid for, you know, doing what you're expected to do, and then being paid for the value that you bring?
I didn't know things. When I was growing up, I had zero exposure to anybody that owned a business. So I thought you got some form of education and then you got a job. And if you were a girl like me in an Italian household, you waited till you got married off. I saw it differently, and I got a college education and went my own way, but I still had the mindset of I had to get a job and work for a company. When I was in school from kindergarten through college, for me, my report card reflected how hard I worked. And those A's and occasional B's meant I worked really, really hard, but I had some bad, you know, days. That's where the B's came in. And in the, when you go out to work and you go to work for a company, the slap in the face I learned early on was I could do A grade work, but I was going to get the same C paycheck that everybody else got, no matter how hard I worked. And I found that demoralizing, and
right.
made that decision to quit that job, to stay home with that baby. The baby made it compelling, but it wasn't a hard decision to make because I translated that how hard I work at my business will translate into how much I get paid. And that is directly proportional in my experience as an, as a business owner. And, I recreate that year after year after year after year. And so that's how I look at it, is I wasn't suited to the 9 to 5. My something in me was, if I'm going to work hard, I want my rewards to reflect that, not, you know, just assume I'm going to get that pay. And I thought about that in COVID. I would have still been with that company, and I would have had a consistent paycheck and medical insurance and all those other benefits, and I would have been safe. And I thought about that. No, I don't think.
Well,
so.
safe is subjective as well, isn't it?
Because that's true. Yeah.
When you're a business owner, you have to create some form of safety within yourself.
Yeah.
And that comes from self-belief and valuing yourself and respecting yourself, so that you know no matter what happens, you're going to be okay. You're going to be safe.
Yeah.
Because you have it within you. It comes from you. It doesn't come from, you know, your employer's paycheck. And like you say, doing A-grade work and getting C-grade pay, that often happens, doesn't it? And so
it
stands to reason that you would leave, because it's diminishing. That in itself is diminishing.
Yeah. And so
fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. And the people that did the D work and even F work got a C paycheck. So it was
exactly.
Just really, yeah. It was really hard to watch. And I just was not suited. So I think I'm an anomaly in that. I don't know too many. Most people that I know somebody quite well who spent 40 years in the corporate world and decided he's going to do his own company. And, you know, five or 6 years later, still a failure at it. He had that corporate mindset and would not, no amount of conversations about maybe this, have you tried that? And this is what's worked for me. No, you know, he had the corporate mindset and tried to apply it. And
it doesn't
failed,
work.
And pretty much failed at it. Yeah. From what I've heard recently, he's pretty much failed completely.
Sad.
So it's there's some wiring in the brain that makes us good at this.
I think also it's like, it's the human spirit rising within us. And if we allow the human spirit to do that, it will take us out of doing A grade work for a company that pays us C grade pay. I really like that analogy.
Yeah.
It will naturally take us out from that. So if you're listening and watching this podcast and you're thinking, well, I'm thinking of starting a B&B, but I don't know, you know, if I'd be any good at it. Take a really, what would you say, Marie? Let me hand that to you. What would you say? If somebody's listening and watching this and thinking, I really like to start my own B&B, but I don't know if I can do it and I don't know how to do it, what would you say?
You really need to go, because when I first thought about it, I was partnered with somebody who was a naysayer, and my confidence at that point was pretty low, and I believed him.
So right.
It was some years later, you know, he went by the wayside. And so 5 or 6 years later, I'm with somebody else who thought it was a brilliant idea. You really need to believe in yourself, and it's okay if you don't have the capacity to work until that, you know, not work 8 hours, but work until you get that day's goals done and push past wanting to curl up and play, you know, a game on your phone on the sofa with mind numbing TV. That's okay if that's for you. It was just never something that I aspired to. I wanted more in my life. And I guess it's that hunger for more. It's the drive to do more, and the willingness to do more. And setting your own stuff aside for a while, your own pleasures aside for a while, not completely, because that's where you get burnout. But if you've got those drives in those different areas, I think you'll be fine. And then get educated on what to do. But I started without knowing hospitality. I just knew, other than having experienced it, I had been at that point to maybe 20 different B&Bs in 3 different countries. So I had that was my experience. So, but you got to have that drive and the willingness to, do you have what it takes to get through the dry, the lean times and the droughts, the pandemics,
the ups and downs of a business owner's life?
And because even when you're up,
it's never plain sailing.
No. And even when you're up, a friend of mine described me as, I minimize my risks. Okay. The risks are out there, certainly, but I minimize how the eventuality of failure by taking proactive. So even when you're up and the money's coming in, that's not going to be a straight line. It's going to go, what goes up comes down.
Indeed. And it's good waiting till you're down to take action. You've got to be looking into the future. There's and say, okay, this is a good time now. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to plan for, you know, 5 years down or even next year, because I need to keep this going as long as it possibly can. And then I'll, you know, and then, you know, I'll be able to ride the dips better when I'm up here. You said this to me a while ago. When I was up here, a dip would be catastrophic. But when I was up here,
that was the pandemic for me. If that had hit before your course, I was here and a 75% hit is what I took, I would have been decimated. But I was way up here. So a 25% dip took me back to where I had been before your course. I'm home free. And even this year, so I was riding high, but this year I had some compelling expensive things happen. And a lot of us experienced this drop in business over what should have been our busy months. And I, at one point, was almost 40% below last year, but I looked last night and I've whittled that down to 18% because I knew how to pivot and I knew how to drive business to me directly to me.
Proactively.
And, so I've whittled that 40% down to 18%. That is through the education I got through you, not because that's not just hard work and it's not perseverance. It took more.
Educating
myself on how to drive that business and get my business back up again. So I will finish not as strong as last year, but pretty damn close.
Yeah.
Because I knew, and it's not over yet. I still have, 5 weeks.
So, exactly. And anything can happen, right? So we're going to close in a second. How do you think, you know, just you've been in this 34 years. I know you're still going and you still enjoy it. You still love it. You have no plans to stop. How do you, like, looking at the landscape now, how do you see this industry going?
I rely on statistics a lot. So the probability of traditional B&Bs going away, I think, is really small. We've been around for 200 years in this country, and how many hundreds in your end of the world?
Yeah.
The OTAs have only been around, 15 years?
Yeah.
And they're already cracking.
They're already crashing, right?
The kinks are in the armor already. Because we are, we offer a unique personal service and people are craving that. We are great value for the money. But the OTAs, I think, have just gotten so big with their boards of directors and their companies gobbling up. And you've got this parent company that's got all these big companies and they're just too big to pivot. And they're money driven, they're profit driven. And I don't think they can you know, it's the Titanic has hit the iceberg. It's just they haven't figured it out yet. So I see us surviving through this. We may look different, and I do a lot of things differently than I did 34, even 24 years ago. I do things differently because my guests are a little bit different. They're demanding more of me in the terms of they want more, not just a beautiful room and bed and a gourmet breakfast, but they want this time of year, rooms have fireplaces and they want that fireplace going, and they want to have some wine and a charcuterie board in their room for the romantic, whatever, different things like that. They're asking more and more. So you've got to be able to pivot in that regard too, because there's a whole another source of income with these extra things. And the OTAs don't do that. You're a generic room gray type at a generic property. You never see our faces aren't on those listings. It's just room pictures. But I don't think they're going to last. I see the chinks in the armor, especially with booking.com and the notoriety recently, where they haven't been paying their hosts for upwards of six months. And a lot of those people have gone out of business because they completely relied on the OTA. So those people will go away, but us traditional solid owner occupied owner, everything. We own our website. We own our property. We own our business. Those will be fine, I think, as long as they're willing to pivot. Pay attention to what the guests want and start. Don't assume that, well, you know, they didn't want that 10 years ago. Why should I do that now? You know, if you have an attitude like that, then you need to retire, because that isn't what this is about. In any business, I mean, there's hotel rescue, there's restaurant rescue, there's bar rescue, there's motel rescue, all on the HGTV channels. And in a lot of those cases, the owners have a hard head, as my mother would say, and they don't want to change. And those are the people, that's why they're failing. Okay. So, if you're willing to change and pay attention to read the room, pay attention to what your guests want. If they're asking for the same thing over and over and over again, then add that amenity, you know, things like that. I'm not going to put an ice machine I won't put an ice machine in my hallway, but that, they'll have to come down here, but I'll have an ice machine in the pantry, you know, and then I have that kind of thing. You got to listen to what they want. But that's all comes down to you're there, you own it. Your income's on the line if you can't deliver. It's all on your shoulders, and there's nobody else to take the fall like you would in corporate world, where if I made a mistake in a lab and sent out a bad lab report, well, that customer would have been unhappy with the results. I would have had to apologize, but I would still have a job and a paycheck, and on we go. The penalties aren't there in corporate world where they are here. So you really need to pay attention and protect what you've built up. And that comes to listening to what your guests need, because it's changing. It's not in a bad way. It's just changing. Want is, it's a more discerning guest, I think, as well.
I think it is. And I see the landscape, you know, because, you know, we're all in it. And I think that there's a real opportunity here for B&Bs, inns like yourself, to up their game a little bit, not so much spending on lavish accessories, but as you say, listening to what your guests are saying, because what people want, as I've seen, is this need for connection, because we lost so much during the COVID years. We've lost so much connection with each other. They're looking to get that connection need met, and they need the human touch. In my experience, technology should be assisting you, not replacing you.
Oh yeah, and that's the mistake the Airbnb types make.
Exactly. Technology must assist you, but not replace you, because once we get into that world, there'll be no humans anymore. And everything will be a robot.
I mean, does anybody really like talking to a computer when they call up a company to get customer service?
No.
It's the same thing.
It is the same thing. I find that the most frustrating thing ever, when you call up a company and there's a cyborg, there's a bot. Yeah.
As long as we keep delivering that personal experience and providing that connection, we have our own website, we own our own business. People do read my website, because they come in knowing a whole lot about me that they can only have found out on my website. And they come in like we've been friends for ages, and oh, how you doing? Hug, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And on they sign in, and I answer whatever questions they need while I'm checking them in, and rinse and repeat at breakfast. And they want that. They absolutely, yes. Not everybody. I mean, some people are here and they want their
anonymity. Yeah.
But for the most part, I'd say 80% of my guests want that connection and that interaction.
And that's why you're doing so well. And that's why your business is growing, and why it's still here after 34 years, because
people are coming back.
People are coming back. And because that's what your guests want. And that's what you're going to keep on providing.
Because I have people coming back that started coming to me at the other house in the first few years. They're still coming back to me.
Wow.
And more recently, one of the first guests here in 1993, have referred people here as well. You know, so I'm getting that, you know, I am pretty established in that regard with repeats and referrals. But I still have to treat everybody the best and not slide because, oh, well, they've been here before, so I can skate. If you're going to think like that, again, you need to retire. But
and when you started out, like you told me that there were a number of other bed and breakfast in the area, now that has gone right down. So what are we talking about? How many were there before, and how many are there now in your area?
When I started, Sarah was her name. She helped me and two others get started. So there were the four of us, and Sarah and I were a block apart, but the others were quite close, just not immediate neighborhood. That grew to upwards of about 20, 25 B&Bs. But when Airbnb came in, the city started coming down hard on the traditional B&Bs because we had a license and they could find us. So they tried to impose a bunch of stuff on us, and we fought back and we did win that battle. But a lot of people decided, because Airbnb, they saw a decline in reservations. I didn't really notice that. By then I had taken your course and I was on my way up, but they weren't interested in the course. They wanted to do what they were. And so many people decided to just get out and retire. So we are down to maybe five out of that peak of about 25 with, you know, in the face of 11,500, Airbnb listings, although, you know, like four of those are mine, I think, but, you know, but that's still the bulk of those, conservatively 75% of those are whole house rentals. So that's a lot of rental property no longer on the houses that somebody could buy are no longer on the market. So back to it impacts, you know, rents are ridiculous around here.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 to 3 times what my house payment is. And so to get an apartment as opposed to
Unintended consequences, right?
Great, but anyway.
Marie, thank you. That's really insightful. I love your story. I love how you tell it. It's really, really fantastic. Is there anything you'd like to leave with people who are listening and watching? Is there anything you feel is important to say?
Decide if you are just doing this for pin money, as my mother-in-law used to say, or do you really want this to be your career? Not even just business, but I call it my career. And then if you pick the career option, if you pick the pin money option, just keep doing what you're doing. But if you pick the career option, you need to get educated and you need to see other points of view, other perspectives of those of us who have been around and seen all the different changes. And you really you need your own website. You need a channel manager. You need to expand what you're doing and learn to, if you aren't loving it, if you're resenting it, you should go back to the pin money route. But if you want this to be a career, it can be done. I've never been happier doing this. And I think about a real job. And I cringe and it's like, oh, I can do that. So it is something that's definitely for me. And if you feel the same way, then you really need to, and you want to grow and some of the clients that how they've expanded into different, into wonderful things. It's so neat to see, but if you're just stuck in your own head, as I was for several years before I took Yvonne's course, you're walled in. You need to get out of that and see the rest of the world through the eyes of the success stories that I've helped Yvonne create. So So decide, first of all, is this going to be your career? Are you happy with pin money?
Right. That's a really good advice, because then that really helps you to think clearly about what your next steps are.
And the pin money route's okay, especially if you don't have the work passion, if you don't care if you get a C report card, that's okay. You know, but you need to just ask yourself those questions. You know, do you have what it takes to make this a career? And if you don't, that's okay. Because, you know, the world needs everything. We need doctors and nurses and orderlies in a hospital. It's not, and receptionists. It's not just one job in a hospital. It's not just one job in the hospitality industry. So just find your niche, but, and when you do, you'll be happy with it. So don't try to be something you're not. But if you find that you're in the not, but want to be something more, that's, if you've got that passion and that drive, then you'll explore that. So
brilliant. Thank you so much. That's brilliant.
You're welcome.
Fabulous to talk to you, my dear.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.